So I was asked to talk about, there's no verse today. We're basing it on a chapter, more or less. I'll only dip into a few verses. And I was asked to talk about Lord Chaitanya. This is part of the series building up to Gaur Purnim. I was asked to talk about Lord Chaitanya and his scholarship, Lord Chaitanya as a scholar. So let's hope I can do that well, with your help. And before I start, I have two coins. These are silver tankas. This is before rupees, from the Bengal Sultanate of Hussein Shah. So these are coins from exactly the time of Lord Chaitanya. Both were minted in 1494. So Lord Chaitanya could have touched these coins, but he possibly wasn't a money man. But Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis both worked for Hussein Shah. So I'll pass them around and you can just touch these things. There, you can see there's Islamic script on them, which is usual for the... I do want them back. It would be, I can use them again at another class. There you go.
Flick it over.
Well, there you go. It's mystic. You need special initiation. So we'll begin by talking about Lord Chaitanya as a scholar, because he was a scholar of Sanskrit grammar. He opened his Sanskrit grammar school at the age of 11, and he maintained that until his enlightenment, we may call it, his initiation. When he went on his tour of South India, he collected manuscripts. That's quite a scholarly pursuit. He was very well known for his grammatical scholarship before he went on that. This was much later in his life. But when he went there, he collected at the Adikeshva temple the Brahma Samhita and Krishna Karnamrita. And these two texts became the foundational texts of our tradition in those very early days. He took them back with him to Bengal and Orissa, and he asked for them to be copied. And again, this is a very scholarly kind of pursuit. In those days, there weren't printed books in India. Everything had to be hand-copied. So to get a manuscript was quite an achievement. So he got these manuscripts from these temples and took them back. Brahma Samhita we know. Well, Krishna Karnamrita we might not know as well. It's by Bilva Mangala Thakur. And there have been three commentaries on it by Vaishnavacharya since that time. So in the early days of our Sankirtan mission, these two books, but Krishna Karnamrita, were taken very seriously. These are books we should ultimately study. And when I mention the word study, then the word scholarship also comes to mind. The basis of our society is quite scholarly. And it starts with Lord Chaitanya. There's also the story of the Brahmin who was having the difficulty that he expressed to Lord Chaitanya. He couldn't understand how Mother Sita was treated in the Ramayana and what was going on there, and how Ravana could steal Sita, and how could that happen, that Sita Devi could be, you know, in the association of but such a rascal, such a rogue. And Lord Chaitanya in his travels came across the Kurma Purana. And in it, it mentions that the Sita that was stolen was Maya Sita. This wasn't actually Sita. So he took this Purana and came back to the Brahmin and gave him the evidence, just so that he could be peaceful in his heart. So again, how did he solve that problem? He solved it through scholarship. He understood, okay, we have to find evidence. Where is the evidence? And he goes to the Kurma Purana. How many of us have read the Kurma Purana recently? So he went beyond what we would consider to be our tradition. In one sense, our tradition, we haven't even really included Krishna Karnamrita. You know, how many of us have read that recently? So what is our tradition? And how broad is it? And where can we gather sources from? So this is what scholarship is about. Scholarship is about using the intelligence, buddhi. And the function of intelligence is, one is memory, and the other is discrimination and discernment. How do you discern what's a good text to study? How do you discern that this text will help us achieve our goal? That's that kind of intelligence we need so that we can maneuver around the world simply. We can be guided. And when we have a crisis of faith, as in the case of this Brahmin with Mother Sita, that we can actually help people. And sometimes we have to go outside what we, our normal course of literature, to find something that can help someone. If we also look at who Lord Chaitanya preached to, he preached to Prakashananda Saraswati, a very renowned scholar of the time in Benares, the center of learning. He preached to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, another very renowned scholar. These two scholars are renowned in their own right. They're still famous in India as being philosophers. He preached to the Kashmir Brahmin, whoever that was. We don't actually know who it was. He preached to the Chankazi. The Kashmir Brahmin was a Digvijaya. He was on a Digvijaya, a tour of collecting plaudits for being a great philosopher, which he was. The Chankazi was a Muslim ruler, but very learned. And Tapan Mishra, he preached to him. Again, a very learned Brahmin. And we meet him in this chapter, in fact. And teachers of the Tattvava tradition and the Buddhist tradition. So we don't see him preaching to very many. Of course, he preached also to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami and others. But the people he interacted with intellectually, all of them were astonished by his learning. He didn't stop to preach to many people. He mainly did Sankirtan for the general masses, for the likes of us. He did Sankirtan. But when he did stop to speak to someone, it was someone who was worth speaking to. And everyone he spoke to, he was above their head. And they realized that fairly quickly. So again, what kind of scholarship, what kind of knowledge base does this person have? We'll see in the story here in the 16th chapter of the Adi Lila, it's mainly about the person, the Kashmir Brahmin, the Brahmin from Kashmir. He's called the Kashmiri Pandit. Sometimes he's called Keshava Kashmiri, but Keshava Kashmiri was an actual person and not just any old Brahmin. So there's no evidence actually in the text that this was Keshava Kashmiri, who was an Embarka. So later in our tradition, we decided that it was Keshava Kashmiri, but not in the early texts, just to let you know. That's what scholarship does, just confuses the issue. But this was just a Brahmin from Kashmir who was on a Digvijay, traveling around, and he came across Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was very young at the time, and he decided to have a chat with him because people were saying he's an astonishing young man and up and coming. So he thought, as part of his journey of victory, his Digvijay, he would be victorious over this. He'd collect a little thing as well, just to add to his glories. And unfortunately, he ran into a brick wall with Lord Chaitanya. He thought Lord Chaitanya was a grammarian. And to be a grammarian is to know Nyaya, which is what Navadvipa was famous for, Nyaya philosophy, logic, etc., and Mimamsa, so that this is the basic standard of Brahminical learning. Grammar, Sanskrit grammar, Nyaya, and Mimamsa. And Vedanta, which we practice, is half of Mimamsa, just to let you know. And higher than that again is then getting into Vedanta more properly, as we understand it, Sankhya and other philosophies, and then the highest level is Kavya. So Lord Chaitanya was practicing as a Sanskrit grammarian and Nyaya philosopher, etc. So the Digvijaya thought, easy peasy. And he doesn't even have the capacity to analyze my composition because he's a Kavya scholar. So he reamed off 100 verses just off the top of his head and just said, la 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 la, And that was enough. As far as he was concerned, job done. This little scuddy guy, he's not going to, he can't even respond to this. He doesn't have the learning or capacity. And it's interesting how he responds. We'll go into that a little later. And it's also interesting to look at who he associated with. Swarup Damodar, Rupan Sanatan, Raghunath Gopal Bhatta, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, these were his principal associates. Again, highly learned people. All the associates of Lord Chaitanya were very learned. They weren't only, well, you can't say only devotees, but they weren't simply devotees. They were highly learned people. There was this balance of the text by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, Shikshartha Mekha Purusha Purana. So Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, Vairagya and Vidya and Bhakti Yoga go together. So the principles of Brahminical culture are Vidya and Vairagya. If you have renunciation and knowledge, these things go together. If you have knowledge without renunciation, you can't use that knowledge with adhikar, with good qualification. If you just have Vairagya, you can't maintain Vairagya without knowledge. You have to know why you're doing it. But these things in Bhakti Yoga, they're like two tracks. The train, us, we run on these two tracks. And you can't run on one track. So these two tracks have to be in balance with each other. So we don't reject the path of knowledge. It's just we're only interested in transcendental knowledge. But everything that supports transcendental knowledge. And that's a lot of things. So, yes, and then let's look into a question that is sometimes a conflict, certainly in the Sankirtan mission as it has developed in our ISKCON. So Lord Chaitanya developed a tradition that was highly scholarly. No, it wasn't even very scholarly, it was highly scholarly. It was the most scholarly movement at that time in India. Very profoundly scholarly. But in ISKCON, we sometimes have a little difficulty with scholarship. Here's one text talking about Lord Chaitanya. After some days, the Lord went to East Bengal, and whenever he went, wherever he went, he introduced the Sankirtan movement. And this was after he became a teacher. And in the purport, Prabhupada said, although Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees in disciplic succession can defeat all kinds of learned scholars, scientists, and philosophers in arguments, thus establishing the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their main business as preachers is to introduce Sankirtan everywhere. Simply to defeat scholars and philosophers is not the occupation of a preacher. Preachers must simultaneously introduce the Sankirtan movement, for that is the mission of the Chaitanya cult. I've just heard this line repeated over and over. Simply to defeat scholars and philosophers is not the occupation of a preacher. So it's kind of dismissing scholarship. And there's this scent in ISKCON of dismissal of education and scholarship, etc. But the next sentence is preachers must simultaneously. So it's not dismissing the last sentence. It's including the last sentence. It's both things. To be a scholar isn't enough, because we think if you put all the energy into being a scholar and then you can defeat all these big people, then it's like the Digvijay. I've just done my journey of victory over everyone. But in actual fact, we would think that that's enough, and all the devotees will give us praise and think we're great because we've done that, so that's enough. So Prabhupada is making sure that we don't get diverted from our mission. Our mission is Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. It's both things. There's this balance. It's not either or. And we have a tendency towards either or. I'm a devotee and you're a what? A Christian? Well, you must be wrong. Why is it either or? Where did that thinking come from? So the same here. Simply to defeat scholars and philosophers is not the occupation. Simply to defeat. If that's the only thing going on, simultaneously, we must introduce the Sankirtan movement, for that is the mission of the Chaitanya cult. So he's clearly saying, in the English of the sentence, that it's both things. Somehow, we interpret this that it's not. It's actually two things, and one of them is to be rejected as simply not that, but this is the mission. So we have to closely read the text. Prabhupada is very good with the use of language. His use of vocabulary is excellent, and the structure of the sentence is clear. But we have to understand, how do we interpret this? And interpretation is a function of intelligence, discernment, discrimination. And you have to have knowledge to be able to do that. In text 11, just further on in the text, it says, if one becomes a bookworm, reading many books and scriptures, and hearing many commentaries and the introductions of many men, the instructions of many men, this will produce doubt within his heart. One cannot in this way ascertain the real goal. And in the purport, Prabhupada said, one shouldn't make a profession of reciting many books, especially if one is a devotee. One should not read many books, nor try to make a profession of it. So, again, what's he saying here? Is he saying, if one becomes a bookworm, reading many books and scriptures, hearing many commentaries and the instructions of many men, it'll produce doubt in the heart, therefore don't read books? I don't think that's what he's saying. He's saying that if one becomes a bookworm, reading many books, scriptures, commentaries and the instructions of many men, this will produce doubt in the heart. Why? Because you're just totally confused. You're just reading anything and everything, getting instruction from anyone and everyone. And how can you act? You can only have one acharya in your life, one guru in your life. You have to choose that person through your own discrimination, and we have to pray for the discrimination to do that. But we have to have one instruction. Otherwise, as soon as you have two, you're confused. What to speak if you're reading 5 or 6 or 7 or 9 or 10? Yes, you need choice, but after you've had choice, you have to make a decision and follow a path. So again, this is a clear instruction. It's not an instruction to say, don't read books. It's an instruction to say, how do you read a book? How do you take instruction? And once you've taken instruction, then you can read any book, because you bring the conclusion of any book back to your acharya, and you can say, okay, this is what the book says, this is what my acharya says, oh, now I understand this. You have that way of understanding. There's someone there who can help you understand. I know so many devotees who have gone out and met with philosophers and scientists and scholars and religious people and have been challenged, and properly challenged, it's the normal way, and then go back to the books and then find what Prabhupada has to say about it, and then that gives them their perspective. When you meet someone who's more intelligent than you, you don't have to take initiation from them. But to accept the challenge is intelligent. When they give you a proper challenge, it's like, oh, that's a good point. Just to simply reject the challenge, someone says, the Vedas, were they written 5,000 years ago? Are you sure about that? Is anyone here actually sure about that? Just crisis of faith? Have I introduced the crisis of faith? So what do you do with that? So you can look at them and say, you're a demon. You know, you can just knee-jerk react and reject them because they're saying something that you can't compute. It doesn't mean that it's not computable. It doesn't mean that it's not a good question. It's actually an intelligent question. Everyone should be asking that question. Any intelligent person. And then we should go and find an answer. So the Brahman, in the case of Sita, he had an intelligent question. This was an intelligent observation. And even an emotional observation for him, he was disturbed by this. And Lord Chaitanya went and found an answer and came back. This person didn't have the capacity to go out and find that book. He was stuck in one place. Lord Chaitanya was traveling around, so he went and found the answer and took the trouble to come back to him and say, here you go, problem solved. So that's an important point to make. And then text 15, to round that up. This is the Lord talking to Tapan Mishra, who is the person being discussed in these texts. Tapan Mishra was very learned, highly learned, and very confused, because he just was reading too much and he hadn't got a focus. And Lord Chaitanya says, the Lord, being satisfied, instructed him about the object of life and the process for attaining it. He instructed him that the basic principle of success is to chant the holy name of the Lord. And that's the basis. So there's a focus. And if we don't have that focus in life, if we don't have that direction, and it has to come from outside ourselves to direct ourselves, it's just a nonsense, then it's very difficult to focus our minds. Now, if you find anyone who's focused, you can offer them respect because they're intelligent enough to know that I have to work under authority. Intelligence isn't just anything and everything. Any idea that comes in, the latest book, and then we reformulate all policy. That doesn't help. But the latest book can help us in our journey. Every book, every piece of knowledge, there's no knowledge that is useless. Every piece of knowledge can help us if we know who we are in the game of knowledge. So the basis of it is the scholarship without the Sankirtan mission is very difficult, is not the process for the age, is not recommended. But with the Sankirtan mission, it becomes extremely powerful. So it's important for us to read and hear and discuss. Like this Bhagavatam class instituted by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said that these Bhagavatam classes was where the speaker comes to share realization. So it's not that we're bound by just talking about the absolute truth. Yes, we are talking about the absolute truth, but this is only my understanding of the absolute truth. And you have your understanding. And there are as many understandings of the absolute truth in this room as there are devotees. So it's important that we share our understanding of the absolute truth so that we can understand more, learn more. None of us are perfect. None of us have the absolute truth. The absolute truth is Krishna. Who has Krishna? Krishna gives himself to whoever he wants to and takes himself away when he wants to as well. So no one has Krishna. So what is our understanding of the absolute truth? By Krishna's grace, we have some understanding. And that understanding we share as much as possible, because it's a little something we can give. And that's the essence of the Sankirtan mission, is a sharing of bhakti. Bhaj, the root word of the Sanskrit word bhakti, means to share. It requires two people. So our whole life is about other people. How do I share this bhakti? And if I'm in a room here, and my concern is to share my bhakti, and there's so many people in the room concerned to share their bhakti, well, I'm just inundated with bhakti. We're all okay. This is a good scene. But if we act like that. I will now talk about Lord Chaitanya's method of preaching, and there's only one word that can describe it, and it is humility. The text, Lord Chaitanya's text of Trinadapi Sunichina. So it's said that this text should be hung around our neck in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But this is the reason why. We can't act in the world as devotees without this text, without understanding this text. More than understanding, living it. Without living it, we can't understand it. Humility is a scent. It's not a tangible thing. It's not something that you can take out of your pocket and say, here's my humility. Well, having said that, I haven't seen those coins again. Anyway. But humility is something, it's like a... Oh, thank you very much, sir. It's like a gem. Thank you. That was an immediate response. So in text 6 of this, it's interesting when Krishnadas Kaviraj talks about Lord Chaitanya beginning his teaching life, and in his teaching life he's meeting so many people and discussing with them. He says, the Lord defeated all kinds of scholars in discourses about all the scriptures, yet because of his gentle behavior, none of them were unhappy. Just think about that as the kind of preaching we could be doing. Imagine preaching to someone, at the end they're not unhappy. You know, when you're going to smash someone, then in the end they feel smashed. They're not actually going to take up Krishna consciousness. They're going to resent you, possibly for the rest of their lives. Julius Caesar said one time, you can treat a person like a slave all their life, but if you call them a slave to their face, they'll hate you. And if we call someone a demon, rascal, fool to their face and convince them that it's true, they'll hate us. The most ineffective form of preaching we could engage in. Lord Chaitanya very clearly shows us how to preach, how to discuss, how to debate, how to talk to people, how to act with people in any way. There's the story of the in the early days when Lord Chaitanya was doing his grammar school. He had written a Sanskrit grammar, and some Brahmins had seen it and they were overwhelmed by it. They thought, this is the best Sanskrit grammar. And he had it as a manuscript in a boat. Himself and another Brahmin were crossing the Ganga, and the other Brahmin started to say to him, but your text is so good that all my life I've been working on a text, and now all my life is useless because I can't compete with this. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, and he took his text and threw it in the Ganga so that this person wouldn't be disturbed. How many of us would do that? The thing that we, you know, whatever we produce is precious to us. As from an ego point of view, it's mine, my work, my energy. It validates me. It is my self-esteem. It is my self-confidence is inherent in the thing that I produced, me. And Lord Chaitanya just gave it up like that because it disturbs someone. And this is Trinada Pisanichina. You offer all respect to others. This person needed this respect. Lord Chaitanya didn't need the respect of a publication. This person did. So Lord Chaitanya said, well, give it to him immediately without thought, so that someone wouldn't be disturbed. That's humility. And text 33 and 35 here. When he's talking to the Brahmin from Kashmir, the Brahmin says, I have heard that your students are very expert in the word jugglery of grammar. So at this stage, he's putting Lord Chaitanya down, saying, you're not actually qualified to discuss my shlokas. And Lord Chaitanya says, yes, I am known as a teacher of grammar, but factually, I cannot impress my students with grammatical knowledge, nor can they understand me very well. So he lowers himself even further. He accepts this compliment from the Brahmin. And he says, my dear sir, whereas you are a very learned scholar in all sorts of scriptures and are very much experienced in composing poetry, I am only a boy, a new student, and nothing more. Therefore, I desire to hear your skill in composing poetry. We could hear this if you would mercifully describe the glory of Mother Ganges. And then with that, the Brahmin composes verses in praise of Mother Ganges. And after it, Lord Chaitanya... So Lord Chaitanya set him up with humility. He with his humility, then the guy felt, okay, did his thing. And then, 51, let's see if this is the one. So he does, yes. Again, taking a humble... So he's finished, and he says... You are an ordinary student of grammar, says the Brahmin. What do you know about literary embellishments? You cannot review this poetry because you do not know anything about it. Now, kavya, this Sanskrit poetry, when he talks about literary embellishments, they will use alliteration and metaphor. So they'll use in five words in one line, ba, 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 and they'll have that syllable inherent in certain words, and that's the alliteration. And then they'll use wonderful metaphor, and the metaphor will be inherent in words, that the word invokes a picture. So it's you know, it's a real thing to be able to compose this. It's a wonderful thing. But after that, Lord Chaitanya says, taking humble position, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, because I am not on your level, I have asked you to teach me by explaining the faults and good qualities in your poetry. Certainly, I have not studied the art of literary embellishments, but I have heard about them from higher circles, and thus I can review this verse and find in it many faults and good qualities. So he says, I'm not actually qualified, but I've heard from people who are. So based on that, I can. So again, humbly, he works himself into a position where the Brahmin has no choice but to allow him to explore his poetry. And then he finds five faults and four positive qualities. But some of the positive qualities are backhanded because they're only positive because they're based on the faults. So he goes through, he takes one verse out of the middle. He's heard 100 verses. He's memorized each of them. He takes one out of the middle and he analyzes it and finds four faults and these good qualities. And this is really good scholarship. It blows this guy completely out of the water. And everything he says is correct. And this chap wasn't expecting it. And then in text 108, at the end, the poetic champion who by this stage has realized that he was a devotee of Saraswati Devi, and after he was defeated like this, he went to sleep that night and Saraswati came to him and told him who Lord Chaitanya was and that he's got to get down off his high horse now. He knew he was defeated. The poetic champion was certainly most fortunate. His life was successful by dint of his vast learning and erudite scholarship, and thus he attained the shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so his life was successful by dint of his vast learning and scholarship. He surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, but his success in life was the fact that he was so learned. If he hadn't been so learned, he wouldn't have even met Lord Chaitanya. But it says here, to be puffed up with false learning, therefore, is a disqualification for accepting Krishna consciousness. But here is a special example. For although the poetic champion was a greatly learned scholar, the Lord also favored him because of his humble submission. And again, it's humility. So the Lord was humble in his approach. So he allowed this person, he gave this person all respect, even when he defeated him. Obviously defeated him. He continued to respect him very humbly. But that allowed this person to be humble also and to submit. And in a learned way, because submission in that sense is the basis of our tradition. We have to be able to submit to Krishna. Who else submits to Krishna? Muslims. The word Muslim means to submit to God. Anyway, just a bit of learning. if we look at Lord Chaitanya's preaching to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, to Prakashananda Saraswati, to Chankazi, with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma said, I'm going to preach to you, and Lord Chaitanya allowed him to preach without interruption. He went on for days just downloading Vedanta philosophy, and Lord Chaitanya very quietly sat there and listened, because this was his respectful elder. This person was older than him. So even on that basis, he was going to be respectful and humble. But interestingly, if you look at it from an intellectual point of view, once you've heard someone's argument, it's a lot easier to respond. If you notice an interaction between a devotee on the street with anyone else, we're just there trying to get our word out. And the person says, yes, but such and such. And as they're saying it, you're going, yeah. Just waiting to get the word in. We're not actually listening. Do we ever listen? Or are we just so eager to download to someone who maybe has not asked for a download? Do we know who they are? Do we know what their condition is? Do we know what they need in life? We know what we think they need to know. And we'll tell them for free. We're very generous. But does it work? So Lord Chaitanya just sat there and listened. And then eventually, Sarvabhauma ran out of steam and turned and said, what do you think? He asked a question. And therefore, there was an answer to be given. And Lord Chaitanya answered him. And based on that, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became a devotee. With Prakashananda Saraswati, Lord Chaitanya was a young sannyasi. So he acted like a young sannyasi. He came into the association of the sannyasis of Benares, all very senior people, and he sat at the back where they washed their feet. He took the humble position. And that's why he was then, Prakashananda noticed him and invited him into the assembly. He gave him the platform. Without that platform, he was going to impose himself. You can't impose yourself on people. It's not a good relationship. How can you? Where's the point of sharing? If I'm going to preach to someone, how am I going to share if I don't respect them at all? If I don't take them seriously? If I don't take their life seriously? We can learn something from absolutely everybody. And the Chankazi, he treated him like an uncle because he was older. You can say he was a Muslim, meat eater, rah, rah, we can say whatever we like. But the fact that Lord Chaitanya treated him with great respect. Krishna, Krishna. And finally, I'll just say a few words about Lord Chaitanya's legacy as a scholar. Maybe most importantly, the Goswamis, the people that he attracted as his disciples, are incredible people. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, the Goswamis in Orissa, the Goswamis in Bengal, and they were all writing wonderful literature. Gopinath Acharya in Oxford, he's a Kavya scholar, and he was telling me that the Kavya of the Goswamis is of the highest level of scholarship, and people are beginning to realize that now, 500 years later. They're beginning to engage with this, with these texts because of people like Gopinath Acharya, because they're translating the text and they're reading it in Sanskrit, getting scholars together and reading it, the text in Sanskrit, appreciating the actual Sanskrit poetry. But this is, he said that this is the greatest gathering of Kavya scholars in the history of this period. Nothing like this has happened since. That there's been such a collection of such highly intellectual people. And these are the people who formed the basis of our tradition. They're all people who spoke many languages. They had all kinds of experiences. As I said, Rupa and Sanatan were dealing in these coins for the Hussein Shah. They knew about administration. They knew exactly how the world worked. And they knew how to retreat from the world. So they engaged with the rasa that we talk about of Rupa Goswami is from literary critical theory from Bharati and different people from a much older era of Sanskrit literature. That's not necessarily spiritual literature. It's about drama, how to construct dramas. So Rupa Goswami, he knew this literature, kind of secular literature, and took this rasa theory into his kavya and created beautiful poetry and used this concept to explain our theology. This is highly intellectual. We just accept it. We just hear rasa, oh yes, Radha and Krishna. No. We don't understand where this comes from. This is a person who knows how to use the world around us to worship Krishna. These were Lord Chaitanya's followers. When they were in Vrindavan, they gathered manuscripts together. They didn't only build up Vrindavan, but they gathered all the manuscripts they could find. Many of those manuscripts weren't pertaining to our tradition, but were just ones that they were interested in. And Krishnadas Kaviraj, this very book itself, is such a wonderful piece of literature, but also a very modern biography. It's very difficult to find a piece of literature like this in the whole Indian canon of the time. And after this, everyone started to produce biographies for all kinds of people. This set a standard. And not only that, but of Lord Chaitanya himself. He had such a learned following that we have so many biographies. There are so many people capable of doing this. Again, nothing like this happened previous to this point. And the example of his method to inspire our approach is a legacy for us. Trinada Pi Sunichina. How do we preach? How do we form our Sankirtan mission? What is the culture of our mission? Do we have to establish our truth over other people? Do we have to establish our culture over other people? Do they have to look like us, dress like us? Do they have to believe what we believe? Do we have to convert other people? Or is it the case that people convert themselves? As Prabhupada says, that was his opinion. We don't convert anyone. It's between the person and Krishna. It's a relationship, heart to heart. All we can do is share heart to heart whatever we have in our heart. And if that inspires someone, then they can convert themselves. You've given them some nourishment, some food. You've watered a seed. So our soft power of humility, I would suggest, will always win. That's what Trinadapi Sanichina says. And there's no doubt in my mind that that is a verse that we have to hang around our necks because we forget it every 5 minutes. But if we can remember it at the right time, in the right relationship with someone, we can inspire someone to take up a life, a spiritual life, a Krishna conscious life, a good life. We can just inspire them to be better. Just go to the next level of where they have to go. It's not everyone has to shave their head and, well, I'm not a good example of that, but it's not everyone has to do that. You know, people can do what they like. Why? Because they can. They have that freedom. And it's not ours to take it away. That's humility, just understanding that point. So give them, if they have the freedom to choose, give them more choice. Give them the choice of Krishna. That's what we can do. And if we do it effectively, and if we do it with our full heart, and if we do it humbly and respectfully, they may be able to take it. We have to individually find out how that works for us. But that's Lord Chaitanya's legacy, that this soft power is going to be the most effective power in the Sankirtan mission. Jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Harinam Sankirtan ki. Jai, jai. So does anyone have any questions or comments or...